Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some interesting guests on. In the first half, we have Stephanie Hall educating us on oral health. And in the second half, we have Eddie Fadikoff. He's a doctor and a nutritionist, and he is the author of Dr. Fadoff, Simple Weight Loss Solutions That Last a Lifetime. So here's Alan with the Health First News.
When a woman with epilepsy uses the anti-seizure drug Valproate during a pregnancy, the onset of her baby will go on to develop ADHD rise, a new study suggests. The Danish report can't prove that Valproate causes attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in these cases, only that there's an association. But in the new study, fetal exposure to Valproate was tied to 48% higher odds of a child developing ADHD, according to a team led by Dr. Jacob Christensen at Aarhus University. The study included more than 900,000 babies born in Denmark between 1997 and 2011. The child's mental health was tracked from birth until they averaged about 10 years of age. Other epilepsy drugs appeared to have no effect on ADHD rates, the researchers noted. The findings were published online January the 4th in JAMA Network Open. More than 10% of U.S. adults have a food allergy, and nearly double that believe they do, a new study estimates. Researchers found that 19% of those surveyed thought they had a food allergy, but when the investigators dug into people's symptoms, they found that only 10.8% reported convincing signs of a true allergy. Experts said the findings highlight two important facts. Food allergies are common among U.S. adults, and many mistakenly believe they have one. Lead researcher Dr. Ruchi Gupta, a professor of pediatrics at Northwestern University in Chicago, said there are many misconceptions around reactions to food. The study, published online January the 4th in JAMA Network Open, included more than 40,400 U.S. adults. Don't blame a loss of taste on your mouth, new research suggests. Instead, most people can thank their nose for the problem, the study authors said. The research team at the Virginia Commonwealth University's Smell and Taste Disorder Center examined the records of 358 patients who were evaluated for a taste disorder or combined taste-smell disorder between 1980 and 2017. Instead of a measurable loss of taste, most of the patients checked for a taste disorder actually had problems with their sense of smell. Those checked for taste disorder only were more likely to have taste problems than those checked for both taste and smell loss. The study was published recently in the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology. If you think a switch from sugar to a calorie-free sweetener might help you get healthier and shed pounds, think again. After years of research, there's still only very weak evidence that no-cal sweeteners might be beneficial, according to German researchers who looked over data from 56 studies involving either adults or kids. The investigators looked at a variety of health outcomes, including weight, blood sugar, oral health, cancer, heart disease, kidney disease, mood, and behavior. The team led by Jörg Mierpohl of the University of Freiburg concluded most health outcomes did not seem to have differences between the non-sugar sweetener exposed and the unexposed groups. The report was funded by the World Health Organization and was published online January 2nd in the BMJ.
We have Jim Radcliffe with us this morning, and he is going to be educating us on oral health and some things we can do when you end up with on chemo or with mouth ulcers or dry mouth. So welcome, Jim.
Thanks so much. How are things up on the Fraser River?
Oh, they're beautiful. So can you tell us a little bit about how mouth ulcers start or why people get dry mouths?
Sure. There's a variety of reasons why people get dry mouth. One of the principal ones is as we age, our nasal passages contract, just like many of the other areas of our body that contract or lose their tone. And so we tend to breathe through our mouth. And as we breathe through our mouth, we get less oxygen. You get about 20% less oxygen by breathing through your mouth than through your nose. And you dry the tissues in the mouth because the three salivary glands can't keep up with the input of air inhaled through the mouth. So that's one of the principal causes. Another one are medications that we take, and we've been working with oncologists and oncological nurses who are working with cancer patients. It's not unusual for someone on chemotherapy to develop oral sores and dry mouth or xerostoma as a result of the medications they're taking. There are about 155 chemotherapy drugs that induce oral sores and or dry mouth conditions, or oral thrush, which is a fungal overgrowth in the mouth. As a consequence, untoward side effect of chemo, and it usually starts up a couple weeks after somebody starts on it. And then the last thing I would mention, there's a whole panoply, but just to focus on three for the purposes of the discussion, would be those people who've been through head and neck cancer, where they've had surgery or radiation, and the radiation damages the salivary glands, and they are very slow to recover. And so that also is another group of people that that have problems with dry mouth.
Okay. So if sometimes with radiation to the head and neck, you actually lose the benefit of your salivary glands altogether?
I'm sorry?
So can it be a permanent damage with the radiation to the head and neck?
It can be pretty severe in its damage. We've got a guy who's head and neck cancer survivor, and he had major reconstruction. He claims he has 80% of his saliva back now, 4 years after his surgery. I don't know what the statistics are in general on that, but there is major damage that's caused by radiation to the salivary glands.
Mm-hmm. So what's this? What are some things people can do when they do get these mouth ulcers or dry mouth? What are some ways that they can benefit?
Sure. There are two things that one can do. One is keep your mouth clean, and the other is keep your mouth hydrated. And some dry mouth products that are over the counter have glycerin or some other form of mouth hydration system, and that will work on a temporary remedy of the problem. That is, it will rehydrate the mouth, but oftentimes glycerin-based solutions will also dry tissues further, so it tends to, you know, make a vicious cycle. You get relief, but then you have the problem back.
And slippery elm lozenges, do they actually coat and act as a demucilant, so they're beneficial as well?
Yes, yes.
And so they'd be a better choice than the glycerin, just from not drying out the tissue?
From the perspective of not drying out the tissue, correct.
Okay. And what would be some benefits, like if you had the oral thrush, if you had canker sores or mouth ulcers, how would you deal with the bacterial problem or the fungal problem?
Right. Each of those conditions are characterized by usually multiple species of bacteria or a fungus. So an example would be thrush. The predominant species is Candida albicans. It's a common bug that's found throughout your body, but it's overgrown, and that's what's causing the problem. But there are about six different species of Candida, and they live in a colony, and when they get together in a colony, they become more difficult to treat. Our products are very effective at killing Candida in the mouth, and are very effective at killing the bacteria that are really causing the inflammation. So dry mouth is a condition that you're not having enough moisture, but it also is a condition where you create an environment where bacteria and fungus and virus can infect tissues, and that causes the inflammation, which is part of the problem. If you get rid of that, then the tissues heal themselves. They come back.
Uh-huh.
And so that's the approach we've been taking. There are some prescription medications that are often used in extreme cases of thrush or candidiasis, and that's azole drugs, and like fucosinol and so forth. And
so
they target specific bugs. They don't target the colony.
Right. So, Jim, if it is a fungal problem or a bacterial problem, where would probiotics or good bacteria come into this? Is there some specific probiotics that you can use in the oral cavity that are better for there than the rest of the digestive system?
Well, probiotics are either supplementing the bacteria you already have or trying to replace them. In the case of fungal infections or bacterial infections, what you've got is an overgrowth of bacteria or fungus that you don't want. Mm-hmm. And there's been a real shift in medicine in the sense that the way that people used to approach these kinds of questions is that, like TB or the plague, you've got a single bug. It's external to your body. If you can find some sort of treatment that'll kill it, then it must be good. Well, the problem with that, with things like viral infections and candida, is these are bacteria and viruses that live in your body, they've been there since birth, and the problem isn't trying to get rid of them. You won't
right.
accomplish that, but rather keeping them in balance, you know, mm-hmm. keeping the ecology. So probiotics is really, if you have something like irritable bowel syndrome, probiotics is very helpful in reestablishing the natural balance in your gut, in your digestive tract.
Mm-hmm.
The bacteria H. pylori, which is one of the culprits in irritable bowel syndrome, which starts in the mouth, is also really helpful for digestion. So you don't want to kill them all off, but on the other hand, you don't want them to get out of hand, if that makes some sense.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of, if you have a lot of a fungal infection in your mouth, it probably is systemic through into the ileum and the large intestine. Is that what you're saying?
It may pass down there. Some bacteria can't survive the acid environment of the stomach. Some mm-hmm. probiotics we take don't make it beyond the stomach because the stomach is filled with some very powerful acid that is used in the body digesting and breaking down foods. But generally, yes, it's not a very pleasant thought, but the mouth is the beginning of the digestive tract of the gut.
Mm-hmm.
And so what starts there ultimately passes through your system.
Okay. So what would be the solution to have it fully helping it, like the whole system?
Well, from an oil care perspective,
mm-hmm.
The ideal would be to keep the bacteria and fungus that are in your mouth in a balance that is helpful to digestion and prevention of disease. You think about how bugs get in your body in the first place. The mouth is a major pathway.
Mm-hmm.
They come in with food, they come in inhaling, and saliva has mucins, you mentioned, and some chlorides in solution that really keep that bacterial balance in check.
Right.
And so it's a very helpful solution from a prevention perspective. But it gets overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So,
okay, Jim, we're going to have to go to a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the oral health and how to keep our tissue and our health really healthy.